Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast as we continue on for part 5 of our 6-part season preview. I know we took a 1-week break in between while we were both on a bit of an excursion, as you could say, but we're back here. We're getting into the really, you know, the nitty gritty of the NBA season when it comes to contenders and the playoffs and championship level type of team. So let's go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and swing it over to my my co-host, Adam Murray.
You went on an excursion?
Well, I know you did.
That sounds so unlike you, though.
Yeah, I had to bumble the handoff to you because I was losing it right there at the end.
Well, I am back. I am good to go. We are through the crappy teams. Now it should be allegedly good teams.
Well, would you consider – the last one we did was coulda, woulda, shoulda, which was the Hawks, the Bulls, the Pacers, the Grizzlies, and the Knicks. Like, would you consider them crappy teams?
Well, they all have fatal flaws.
Yeah. And the other thing is that we have seen a little bit of preseason as we are in the middle of our preview. I mean, is there anything you've seen that would change your mind about anybody before we even get started here?
I don't know.
Like, what do you take away from preseason?
The fact that it's preseason. You're having D-League players and players who are cut. They're getting 20 minutes to see what they can do. And, you know, it's hard to gauge a team when you have players like, let's say, Vince Hunter is getting quality minutes. And then you see, you know, James...
Patrick McCaw heading game-winning shots for the Warriors.
Yeah, there's no way he's... The only way he's in the game is if everybody else is pretty much fouled out. So, yeah. You know, you get some things like, okay, are the rookies... How do they look? You know, like, George's Papagiannis,
yeah.
He's not looking too good. And then you see, like, oh, Brandon Ingram? Yeah, looks kind of frail. And then, you know, Jaylen Brown? Oh, he's... You know, crafty. But you sort of see, like, you know, what do your players look like? And then, you know, on the flip side, Carmelo Anthony. He looks like he's, you know, kind of getting a little slower.
Yeah. It's sort of like the revving of the machine before you turn the ignition and you rev it, but you haven't put it in drive yet. You know, it's just kind of like you're just feeling out the engine to see if there's anything there.
Well,
you know,
thus who have seasons, you do that in the winter.
Yeah, but November and December is the real preseason for a lot of these teams. Like, that's the experimental portion of the season. Would you agree?
That's the team preseason. This is just like an extended gym run.
Yes.
You know, let's learn the plays. We're learning the plays on the fly. And then, okay, let's see how the unit meshes in the first 20 games. This is just let's get up to speed and let's get our arms and legs shaked out.
And it also gets you used to just seeing the new faces in the different places. Like, you know, like, so, like, Kevin Durant has not officially played his first game as a Golden State Warrior yet, but he's already played 4 preseason games, all of which have either seemed like they have been or have been highlighted on national television. So at least you kind of get the idea of, oh, I guess this is what Kevin Durant's going to look like in Golden State, even though he hasn't actually played a game at Golden State yet. You know what I'm saying? So you kind of get used to those kind of new phases, especially the bigger names. And we're actually going to go ahead and get started with that on that note. The title of this crew here is going to be a group of 5 teams, and it's called Hunter or Hunted, where we're talking about teams that are either they were in a position to win a championship or they maybe are in a position to win a championship depending on a couple of breaks. And they might have some teams try to catch up to them, or they might have a target on their back. And then they have teams that got better in the offseason and have a lot of potential to become a title-contending team. Do you feel confident with the 5 teams that we decided on in this tier? Because this is the tier right below the title contenders, the ones that we think – that if they – the ones that are in front of these teams, there's 3 of them, spoiler alert, is that – those are teams that if they win an NBA championship, we'd be like, oh, well, we kind of expected that. Whereas, would you be surprised if any of these teams won a championship?
Kind of, because there's such a gap this year. These are all the teams we expect in the conference finals, and we expect these to be really seeds 2 through 4.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's... Like, but then the difference is, what's this? How does this group rate from the next one? Well, the next group had sort of a missing piece. This one, you know, is going to do a little better. But however, you know, from the two defending conference champions last year, yeah, neither of them seem like they're going to be knocked off. And so we have, you know, the third, you know, the third rematch, and it's like, but...
Yeah, and it would be fair to say that, like, for coulda, woulda, shoulda, which is the tier below this one, that we kind of had them in the range of, like, 40 to 50 wins. Like, our anticipation is we're looking at something like 45 wins, 48 wins, maybe 50 wins. I'm almost certain, barring maybe one team that I'm very skittish on in this list that we'll get to later in the show, is that almost all these teams are probably going to win 50 games or more. Would that be your anticipation, or are you not absolutely sure about some of them as we go along?
Well, they should.
Mm-hmm.
They should, and then the problem with winning 50 games is when you have teams projected in the next tier to win 70 games, it's not, you know, that's why you're in this tier.
Yes. Okay, and like we were saying, you have the new faces, you know, especially big names going to new places, and we're going to start off with your Boston Celtics, who got a pretty big fish in the offseason in Al Horford. Now, a lot of people looked at Horford for just 5 minutes as like a consolation prize because they were going after Kevin Durant. They had Tom Brady in for the pitch meeting and all that hubbaloo about getting Kevin Durant, and it didn't happen, but they were able to sign Al Horford from the Atlanta Hawks. First of all, your reaction when Horford signed there, like, was that the missing piece?
Oh, no, he's not the missing piece. He's the one piece away. For every, as you see now, teams need big threes, and you can't have a big three without having a big two. And, you know, all they had was Isaiah Thomas, who was just the quintessential overachiever the last few years. So, okay, now we need a big name to pair with him. Now, okay, now you need the shooter to go with the big man and the point guard, so... He's not the missing piece. This team, you know, this team, for one, obviously, A, is very young, B, very inexperienced, C, they haven't made it out of the first round of the playoffs. So,
well, let me say this. They still have a lot of the same pieces from before. Now, obviously, Jared Sullinger is gone. They revoked his qualifying offer because they weren't able to, you know, re-sign him after Horford signed there. They let Evan Turner walk, where he got paid by the Portland Trail Blazers. For the most part, though, everybody else stayed the same. You know, they re-signed Tyler Zeller. They picked up the options on Jonas Jerebko and Amir Johnson. Isaiah Thomas is still playing at an all-star level. You still got Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, and, you know, but the thing is, Al Horford coming in the front court, he's such a unique player because his mid-range is so good. Defensively, he's stout. I wouldn't call him great, but he's very good. I thought Paul Millsap being so good defensively sort of hit how good defensively Al Horford was. You know, so a lot of people would take him for granted. And now you're in the Brad Stevens system, which sort of values ball movement and being able to get a, you know, sharing the ball. But defensively, they did need some work. Do you think Horford can help that?
Yes. The one thing Brad Stevens seems to be very above the curve is adaptability thus far. This roster, you looked at even last year, it's just like, well, these players aren't any good. Who knew Evan Turner would find his resurgence?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, be able to cash in on $80 million because of...
A very unorthodox two-guard, like a very unorthodox Vinnie Johnson type of player, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, it just came down to why is this team sort of iffy? It's like, well, because everybody's expecting them to have that big trade, and it was supposed to be, you're supposed to get, you know, Kevin Love or Blake Griffin or Kevin Durant or somebody. It's like, all you get is Al Horford and then a draft pick that Boston fans are warming up to, but everybody else is like, oh, that's a horrible pick, and...
But were you happy with Horford? Like, I mean, I don't want you to be like the pomp and circumstance type of Boston Celtics fan where you're like, oh, I don't know about this move. But, I mean, you were happy with the move, right? I mean, even though they paid pretty good money to get him.
Well, he was the top realistic player available.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you have to pay to get the top. Yeah, he fits in, and watching him in the preseason – you know, he seems to be a very integral part for a team that was god-awful in rebounding last year. And, they, you know, last year they got Amir Johnson to be the, you know, they overpaid him to be the scrapper. Mm-hmm. So, now you start building on that.
And you get him at just the right time because he's 30 years old. Now, how he's going to be after that fifth year when he's 35 years old and he's making over $26 million a year, yeah, that might be scary. But, you know, we're not there yet. We're talking about, you know, these prime years with the Celtics. Are we at a prime level under the Brad Stevens era, or do you think there's still some work left to do?
There's always work to be doing. You can't be a head coach if there's not – if there's not work left to be done. Those who think the work is done, those are the ones who, you know, the old school coaches like Byron Scott, who then quickly are said goodbye to because, well, they're stuck in their ways.
Okay, so what work has to be done for them? I mean, the two that I look at that are huge, or actually three in general, two of them are tied together. Field goal percentage / 3-point field goal percentage was second. Their 3-point percentage was 28th, and their overall field goal percentage was 23rd. That's awful for a young team that is fifth in assists and fifth in points. I mean, that means that you're just not – you're getting up way too many shots, and not enough of them are going in. The other one, I think Al Horford can help with this, unless you disagree with me, is rim protection. They were 22nd in blocks. They didn't have a physical presence. Jared Sullinger was in over his head pretty much every time he was put on an island defensively in the paint. Do you think any of that is going to be able to be helped?
Well, you say shooting is – yeah, they're jacking up the – but they had such a high point because they ran at a faster pace.
Yes.
So, you know, let's get the pacing down first. The shots will come.
Horford's not used to playing fast when he was in Atlanta. Do you think that Brad Stevens will accommodate that by slowing things down?
I don't think he'll accommodate. I think he's going to spread Horford out and not have him keep playing on the low block every time. He's going to start him out, you know, at the three and then sort of move him in slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sort of the, you know, a three-quarter court run guy. Be the trailer, you know, hit, you know, he's been shooting a couple threes in preseason, which I don't really, you know, remember him. He was like the lone guy who was, you know, down low. Everybody else was jacking up threes. But it's, you know, it's the system is be in the right place at the right time. You jack up threes, that's fine. You have people, you know, like Marcus Smart, who can't shoot for anything, and Avery Bradley, who's very hit or miss. He's getting better.
But the good thing about Bradley and Smart is that they're gamers. Like, when they need big shots, they can make them.
Thing about Bradley and Smart, defensively, those two are insane. And you have Jay Crowder, gives fits to big men. And they, like I said, outside of the rebounding, it was, you know, it's just a be in the right place at the right time type of system. And play hard D and run them down the court. Oh, you shoot it up and miss it? All right, that's cool. Just get D, get tons of steals, hound, you know, give pressure.
Will they miss Evan Turner?
Yes, because he was he.
I know
is,
it pains you to say that.
Well, he was terrible, but then again, he tried to, you know, there are many times like, well, he's a point guard now, he's shooting it. No, he is the old school player that is now gone, the mid-range jumper guy.
Yes.
How many of those are left? So
bit of a lost start, yeah.
You know, that's why, you know, they got Jaylen Brown to sort of, you know, you're now the new Evan Turner, be the scrappy guy, get that mid-range jumper going.
Well, the new mid-range guy is Al Horford, in a ways, but that means you have to stretch him.
Yeah, that means you have to stretch him. Okay, you know, so Amir, you're still the down guy. Horford, well, you're the mid-range guy, but you still need to play down low. You know, it just the energy guy.
Yeah, yeah. They had a bunch of draft picks. They used a couple of them on foreign prospects, but the main one that they brought in, along with, you know, people like Demetrius Jackson is another one. Ben Bentel's another one. I don't know if we're even going to see much of them. They also got Gerald Green as a journeyman, free agent, veteran forward, which we'll see how that works out. He's played for Boston in the past when he was younger, but the biggest one was Jaylen Brown. What do you expect realistically out of Jaylen Brown? You know, the number three pick out of Cal.
He is a sneaky, crafty player. He has size and speed, and he's going to be one of those guys, sort of the old school guy who's just like the Harden. He's just going to run to the rim and not put it up. He makes smart plays.
He's super athletic. I mean, you could see that just from the
Yeah, he gets up, he gets contact, and then he'll make some, you know, crazy acrobatic shot to try to get it in. It's mm-hmm. just he needs to work on his jumper, as he doesn't have, but, you know, it's the Brad Stevens mold. Let's get players with high IQs and high motors. With Gerald Green, it's like, well, we need a shooter. He was a cheap shooter available. The Evan Turner buy low. Let's
and
see
they
what
and they needed athleticism. Even though Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley are good defenders, they you know they're smaller, so they're not guys that are going to go over the top on you. Whereas Jaylen Brown can do that. It's just a matter of whether he can totally tap into it. Are you concerned at all with Kelly Olynyk's shoulder injury still leaving him without being able to do contact drills?
He's just he wasn't an integral part. He's okay. A very frustrating player because, yeah, he's your stretch five. He can make a lot of threes, but then, oh, he doesn't really play defense. So it's one of those, well, you have 16 players now and then, you know, 15 roster spots. He's out there. It's sort of a no love loss type thing for him. He's been injured. You know, Avery Bradley went through this. It was just his first 4 years. He was just injured and had surgery on everything. And now Olynyk's having surgery and everything. So maybe he'll be, you know, it's allowing more time for Jonas Jerebko to get minutes and get some good time. You know, he's even gotten some first unit time in preseason. So it's just this team is, I don't want to, they're not talented. They're just insanely deep.
They're very deep. I'll give you some of that depth, and you just give me a quick yes or no of whether we'll see any significant portion of their careers this season. Terry Rozier.
Yeah, he has earned himself some time now.
James Young.
I don't even, him and R.J. Hunter will be battling for the last spot on the team.
That was the next one, R.J. Hunter. So no, you don't think so?
James Young has put on more muscle and some little more size to become a three.
But that's the thing. He has to be a three. He can't be a two.
Well, so, he tried to be a two for the first 2 years, and neither of them are really good right now. It just, you know, I expect lots of D-League for both of them.
Jordan Mickey.
D-League. He, you know, apparently, I guess on Summer League, he came in overweight and unmotivated, and that's why
he looked hurt. He looked like he was hurt.
He wasn't hurt. That was the problem. He mm-hmm. was just lazy.
Gerald Green.
Gerald Green, yeah. Gerald Green is going to initially occupy that Evan Turner spot.
Yeah. I don't know if he can find the magic he had in Phoenix when he came back from overseas. He had that quick stint with the Nets, and then he went to the Suns, and all of a sudden he was like this great spark plug off the bench type of guy at small four. I don't know if he can tap into that at 30 years old anymore. His athleticism is sort of lost, but you know, you never know. They had 48 wins last year. They still have a pretty decent amount of cap space to go with all the draft picks down the road, thanks to those two masterpieces of deals that they did, the Rondo trade with the Mavericks and the Garnett Pierce trade with the Nets. How much of an improvement do you see out of the Celtics from last season to this season, from 48 wins to whatever it would be this year?
Oh, you should have a ton of improvement, because not only do you get the talent of Al Horford, you get the mind of Al Horford, and you get the maturity, the leadership, the knowing how to win and how to play as a winner. Because, mm-hmm. you know, who was the leader? Isaiah Thomas. What winning team has he ever been on?
That's true.
And you know, okay, point. Amir Johnson. Yeah, you're in Detroit and you're in Toronto, but yeah, you were a bit player. It's kind of hard to be the leadership. Like, oh yeah, well, I've seen leadership. I was on the bench the entire time. I cheer. You know, I'm the main towel waver. So you get somebody who's, you know, a good character, high IQ, you know, the only thing that can really doom the Celtics is if Horford goes out with a terrible injury. That will just cripple the Celtics altogether.
That would be tough just because of how thin they are in the front court. Not necessarily, I mean, I know they're big with Johnson, but just in terms of their capabilities, Horford is sort of like their go-to. You know, without him, it really becomes dicey. Are they a hunter? Or are they the hunted in the Eastern Conference? There's a lot of talk about the Celtics since preseason began about their prospects and what they can do.
Oh, they're the hunter right now.
Okay. Like they have to have the mindset of we got to
be the hunted. But right now, they're hungry, but then they should be easily be the two or three seed. And but they don't have that mindset of, yeah, we expect to be here. We need to, you know, hold our position. It's like, no, we failed the past 2 years to do anything. So this is the year finally.
Okay, and that's going to be one of the two Eastern Conference teams that we're going to be talking about in this one, but we're going alphabetically by the name of the city as we have in the previous episodes, and this is going to be the first Western Conference team we're going to be talking about in this category, Hunter or Hunted, and this is the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, I will say this. Maybe you can give – I'm going to give you a preemptive strike. Maybe you can give me a reason why you don't believe this to be the case, but I think automatically this team is the Hunted, not necessarily because of how good they are or – but more because of how good they were.
This is another case of I'm going to just do my usual hedging of bets and go both. They are the Hunted because, oh, well, they're wounded. They got their heart ripped out of them. They have nobody left. But now you just have the Russell Westbrook screw you factor.
Yes, the vengeance factor, as our boy Bill Simmons likes to call it. Kevin Durant obviously departed in free agency. I'm pretty sure they made a really good case to keep him. I mean, let's be serious. If the Thunder beat the Warriors, let me just go through the different layers. If the Thunder were eliminated by the Spurs, would Durant have left? Just a yes or no?
I'm beginning to think yes.
Okay. If they had beaten the Warriors but not beaten the Cavaliers in the championship, would Durant have left?
I want to say yes.
If they went to the finals and won it all?
No.
I agree with that one. Now, the one about getting to the finals, but here's the thing. The Warriors would have found their own vulnerability by being eliminated, which they found out later in the finals, you know, fatefully. And they would have said to Durant, well, you couldn't get there and we couldn't get there. Let's get there together. Which is basically the same thing that happened this summer. Do you have any ill will for what Durant decided to do? But I mean, we're not talking about the Warriors yet. We'll get to them obviously later. But did you have any ill will for what he did, how he decided to do it?
It is a cop out in many ways, but we all saw this with Miami, and that's just the way the culture is now. And then you have the old, well, I wouldn't have done that. Well, yeah, that's why, you know. That's why you guys don't have rings, and that's why Kobe and Duncan have them all, because, you know,
they were willing to take on people,
and it's kind of hard now if everybody's all friends on the Olympic team and everybody's all hanging out with each other. It's not like back then, like, to go to your rival, you would never hear somebody going from Boston to Detroit, Boston to New York, Boston to L.A. That would never happen. Now it's just like, yo, we're all friends off the court. It's all good. So it was just more – it's not that the fact that he left, because the fans, you know, the Oklahoma City fans just had a tantrum and completely, you know, it's like, well, now he
deserves – It wasn't on the level of Cleveland when LeBron left, but it was very, very somber. It was more sad than it was angering, to be honest.
It was – first it was sad, then it was just like, well, I'm burning my Durant jersey. Really? Now you're just a spoiled little kid.
Yeah,
you know, it's move on with your. That's the biggest
I'll say
issue.
This for Cleveland. They're so great. They're so experienced at being heartbroken that they really know how to pile on the misery. You know how to like how to rehearse it. Like kind of like you know the Chicago Cubs are in the playoffs right now. So like you know they blow up the Steve Bartman baseball. Like they do it in style. Whereas Oklahoma City, it's like. Oh, it's like a jilted lover who's never been jilted before. Like they were so mad about the whole thing that they didn't even know how to respond to it all.
You can't dump me. I'm dumping you. I've already gone. Do not contact me. I've unfriended you. No. I'm dumping you. And it was just sort of the way, you know, he didn't really handle himself as classy as he could have. Like you remember, like, who was, like, with Dwayne Wade, you know, Dwayne Wade, as we know, got screwed by Miami, but he put a full page paper in the ad. Hey, thank you guys. Time for me to move
on.
Did
he do an interview with The View at the same time? Like, it was just timing where he had decided to go to the Bulls, and then the next day he had a taping with The View. He had a very heartfelt message for the Miami people. It was almost like he didn't want to leave.
It was, see, that was extremely classy. Durant, yo, I don't care what you think. I'm going to do what's good for me. No, really, from a career standpoint, being a second-tier guy, because it's still, you know, it's still Curry's team. Curry is still taking the last shot. He's not.
Yeah.
This, you know, from a career, which I don't know why we're getting ahead of ourselves in this, but I'll just say, you know, from a career standpoint, from a player perspective, which is what the angle he tried to take, that makes absolutely no sense. Just to say, like, look, it's, you know, it was just, you know, I don't care what you think. Screw you.
Yes. All right. Now, Durant was not only one of the main departures for the Oklahoma City Thunder. They also lost Serge Ibaka. They traded him to the Magic. I think, in hindsight, that should have been the first sign that they weren't sure Durant was going to stay. Because if they had gotten a promise Durant was going to stay, I think they would have tried to make an effort to keep Ibaka and to keep that nucleus intact. But so it goes, and Serge Ibaka is now with the Orlando Magic.
I wouldn't say that. I would say they would have traded Ibaka for a better player, not...
Well, they got Oladipo.
They got Oladipo, who was essentially Durant's replacement now, and then Sabonis, a developmental person. Yeah,
has started in preseason, by the way.
Well, that's just, you know, it's preseason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Josh Eustace is getting minutes, and he's essentially useless.
So... Randy Foy went to the Nets. They pulled the qualifying offer from Deion Waiters because they needed the cap space because they did a renegotiation and extension with Russell Westbrook. So now that free agency is going to be off the board at least until, I believe, 2018. Is that correct, when he has a player option?
Yeah, so they locked him up. He's happy.
They're looking down the barrel at the potential of the Victor Oladipo, Steven Adams, Andre Robertson, restricted free agency, Lollapalooza. We talked about that in the expansion draft episodes about how that could prove to be a deterrent for the Thunder next summer, but we're talking about this season. How do you see the fit with Oladipo and Westbrook? I've heard a lot of criticism about how Oladipo is a little bit of a ball handling guard. He's not a great shooter, but defensively there's a lot of potential between Westbrook and Oladipo.
Well, Oladipo is terrible. Because Orlando tried to make him a point guard literally every year.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. That's all he knows is how to be a point guard. He's never going to be a point guard as long as Russell Westbrook or Cameron Payne are on the court.
He's going to have to play off ball, and I don't know if he can. Like, at Indiana he did, but that was in college. You know, you gotta. It's really in the NBA that you truly find your footing. And if the ball was always in his hands, even with Elfrid Payton, the ball seemed to always find Oladipo. His usage was very high.
Well, yeah, because Elfrid Payton was anemic on offense, so it was just up there's Oladipo playing point guard again. And you know, you have Robertson, who's just a defensive specialist.
Yeah.
So it's just basically going to be the Russell Westbrook vengeance factor. And Ilyasova was a quality pickup, getting Alex Sabirnis from Spain. If you watch him in the Olympics, he looked good. How he's going to fit. He has to sort of beat out Kyle Singler for the backup role.
Do you see any rekindling for guys like Kyle Singler, Anthony Morrow, Mitch McGarry? I mean, do you see anything there with any of those guys that are still there on the team?
No, Mitch McGarry, the Sabonis signing, and then they got Joffrey LaVerne because Denver had too many big men.
Yes.
That basically sort of spells the end, plus not to mention the suspensions and then the re-suspensions for not taking his rehab seriously.
What about the rumblings that maybe they have to move Kanter so that they can try to afford to keep Adams, Oladipo, and Robertson all in the same offseason? Like, do you think Kanter is important enough that you really need to keep him at $17 million a year, $18 million a year?
GMs find ways. Who would have thought Evan Turner would have gotten $80 million? Who would have thought, you know, these players, it's a different especially you don't know now, because now that Durant is gone, that spacing on that team is going to be completely different.
And let me say this, the Kanter-Adams combination worked like a charm against the Spurs. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
but it didn't work during the regular season.
And it didn't work against the Warriors. That's why they had to have Adams come in off the bench. And Kanter was so bad in pick-and-roll defense that they went small with Durant at the 4 and Robertson at the 3. That's why Robertson was valuable for them last year. Now with Waiters gone and with Durant gone, it does change things a little bit. You know, it changes the dynamic of that team. But I do think that Robertson might take a bit of a jump just by default. They need somebody at that three spot. And you can't keep playing Anthony Morrow for years and years and years.
Yeah, but and the thing is, you know, with this team, well, you know, why are they this high? Well, look who's a tier below them. You have Memphis and Houston. Yeah, those teams look a little more flawed. So it's just, yeah, I'm giving
they had
the 55
wins last year.
There now, is going to be less.
But this is what it is. There's a drop factor there, and then there's the buoyancy of, oh, they're better than we thought they would be. So like let's say for example when Durant left, everyone said, oh, that's a 40 win team. So you expect them to maybe bump back up to maybe 45 wins?
Which I didn't expect them to be a 40 win team. It wasn't going to go from that steep of a drop. Because
but why are they still the hunted?
They're still the hunted because. Yeah, we mentioned, yeah, they're better than Houston, they're better than Memphis, that next tier, and then, you know, below that it's just a bunch of little young guns. Mm-hmm. But that there's not much separation between.
Well, not only
these.
That, it's still their spot. You know, even though Durant's gone, it's still – someone still has to take away that spot. Even though the divisions don't matter anymore, they've been running that Northwest division. So somebody's got to take over there and become like the 50-win team out of that division. You know, but is it going to be the Thunder again? That's the biggest key. Like, can Russell Westbrook overwork himself to the point where he gets the Thunder over 50 wins? That's the biggest question.
I don't think he will, but
I mean, he's capable of some great.
He will
things.
Try.
I mean, and it's not like he's like the most efficient player in the world, but he's capable of taking over games all by himself.
And
you know?
And the thing is, if Westbrook gets injured. 30-win team.
Mm-hmm. Oh, if Westbrook's out for even, like, 20 games, like, say, like, we just, you know, they just had news come out about Reggie Jackson. If that happened to the Thunder, they'd be dead. Like, Cameron Payne is out with a broken foot. They can get over that. Now, they're very, very thin after Westbrook, so if Westbrook gets hurt, then you're dead. But because of Cameron Payne's injury, but yeah, that would be very, very trepidatious for them. Let's go ahead and move on to the next Western Conference team, and that is the Portland Trail Blazers, who are also in that Northwest Division.
Okay, defend them.
Well, they had an offseason worth remembering, not necessarily because of like the moves that like the swinging of moves that they made in terms of changing over their team. It's how much money they spent to kind of keep the nucleus that they had. When you watched the Portland Trail Blazers this past postseason, when they eliminated the Clippers after they had their injuries to Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, and then they went 5 games against the Warriors, who were playing most of the series without Steph Curry. Did you see a team that if you keep the core together, then you have a really good playoff contender year to year to year?
I want to say yes, but they did everything, I think, wrong.
By trying to keep the nucleus together?
Their nucleus, you know, they still have to pay CJ McCollum.
Which they did. Well, they agreed to it. So that's
yeah,
on the way.
To, but I'm saying what I mean they have to pay him is he's still on his last year of his deal, so it hasn't even kicked in yet.
Yes, exactly.
That's, you know, I don't mean, oh, we have to find money for him, but, oh, let's get all young guys, but you've tripled down on small ball.
Mm-hmm.
You have, you know, you got Damian Lillard, you got CJ McCollum, you got Evan Turner.
Alan Crabb at the three.
Alan Crabb is your three. Evan Turner is your three. Al Farouq Aminu now has to be your starting four. You gave $10 million, you gave $10 million a year to Mo Harkless, who's also a three, who has to be a four now. You're just set. We're now playing small ball. We have – this is our core seven guys. This is what we're stuck with.
Damian Lillard is just a very – he's a very unique type of point guard. I would almost call him like a mini Russell Westbrook. Would that be fair? But he's kind of a little bit better in terms of distribution of the ball, trying to get players involved than Westbrook. I know Westbrook gobbles up a lot of assists over the last, you know, couple of seasons under Billy Donovan and Scottie Brooks. But with Damian Lillard, he does hog the ball up, but he does have a way of getting the entire offense involved. And he also works really well with CJ McCollum, who's also a little bit of a ball dominant guard. The way that they found that dynamic together without disagreeing and having a big blow up out of who gets the ball most. That's a really, really good fusion to have in the backcourt. But do you think that does hurt the way that the offense plays to the point where they had to rely on Mason Plumlee in the playoffs to get to lead them in assists?
And that's, you know, to give them a comparison, and I think you will agree, you will understand and agree. This team is like the New Orleans Saints.
Okay.
They are just doubling, you know, we have our undersized guards who are going to run the game. We're not going to change anything.
Okay.
Where we can't adapt, they can't change, and then they're not good enough to really, I don't think they're good enough to make it to the next tier because, like, as you see, once it slows down, oh, you have to rely on big men. And like you said, with Plumlee having to lead the team in assists because, well, they shut down everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think also there was a little bit of PTSD on the part of Neil O'Shea, the GM, and the owner, Paul Allen, because they had gotten pillaged in free agency last year with LaMarcus Aldridge, Nick Batum, and, you know, they had that meme out there of all the players around Damian Lillard, and they were all gone except for Lillard. It was almost kind of the same thing with Kent. We talked about this with Kent Bazemore with the Hawks, where they had lost their small forward the year before to free agency, and they just didn't want to lose him again, so they overpaid to keep him. Like, did you feel like that was sort of the mindset? We can't just let free agency and the trade market just kill us by taking away all of our players.
They traded Batum away for Vonleh.
They did, but then they were sort of anticipating the Aldridge exit, and then it became a reality.
Yeah, they
figured Aldridge, and they started moving everybody. Yeah,
but you move Batum because he's not a part of your, you know, you don't see him as really your future, and then you get Evan Turner and Alan Crabb as really Batum replacements. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really seem like an upgrade. Vonleh, I'm waiting for him to do something.
Yeah, he's playing a little more. I got a feeling that they want to put him in the rotation somehow, some way. You know, Chris Kaman's gone. They didn't really get too many bigs except for Festus Ezeli, and the rumor is that Festus Ezeli's got knee issues. So that's why they got him on kind of a low-ball deal. Did you know that he started Game 7 of the NBA Finals?
Yeah, and
now, he was clearly the weak link. Every time Ezeli and Anderson Varejao was out there, that, you know, Cleveland feasted on Golden State. I mean, do you think that Ezeli can provide things for the Blazers?
If he comes back healthy, but it's just, you know, he's sort of damaged goods right now. And then you're just, you know, again, Evan Turner, Alan Crabb, Al-Farouq Aminu, Mo Harkless. Really, you bunch together on these, you know, combo forwards who can't shoot threes and don't.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with Aminu. Like, I thought he played pretty well. He played to the level of his contract. The Mo Harkless re-signing at $9 million per year is questionable. I didn't understand. I would have just let him walk so I could try to keep as much money as possible without going over the tax to try to keep Mason Plumlee. But now, if you want to keep Plumlee, you have to go over the tax, especially with the McCollum re-signing. So things look really trepidatious for them next summer when it comes to spending. But they felt like – here's the thing. They're going to be one of the highest spenders in the NBA starting next year on the books. Is it going to show on the court? They were a 44-win team last year, and they overachieved. I mean, what do you really expect out of the Blazers here? Like 50 wins? Like do they almost feel like they were? Do they feel like the hunted, or do they feel like they have to be the hunter, that they have to go out there and overachieve again?
I don't know if they can. They are definitely hunted now, mm-hmm. because last year they were just underestimated the entire time. Now, well, you guys spent a shit ton of money. Now you guys have to. We expect you to compete with Golden State. We expect you to, because we paid you guys this.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they're up for the task. That's the biggest question.
Exactly.
You know, let me just kind of list a couple of other guys, like Pat Connaughton. You talked about Ed Davis. Myers Leonard being re-signed, just like, that almost made me – I almost laughed when I saw that. Like, I know that Leonard sort of was in a good position negotiation-wise because he was a restricted free agent, and he has a good he's a good three-point shooter, so maybe he would have found something on the open market that Portland couldn't match, so they just decided to re-sign him. But I don't know what he could have what he's going to be able to provide down the road. I mean, do you have a problem with the Leonard re-signing?
There. If that's your – really, your
stretch five. Yeah,
your stretch five and Ed Davis. I mean, you move Aminu's a 4, Davis has to be a 5, and he's going to have to spell Plumlee, and it's just, their big men situation just doesn't look good.
They were 20th in assists. I already mentioned about how, you know, Lillard plays, how he plays with McCollum. I just don't think that can get better because, you know, especially with Evan Turner coming in. Evan Turner's like, he's good at assists, but he's not the best distributor, you know, that you can get off of the bench. And he's not a bench player at the level that he's being paid. That's the other problem. You sort of have to start him.
Yep, and these are all issues they have to deal with.
Defensively, they were 20th in defensive efficiency. They were 27th in experience. That got helped, though, by the additions of Turner and Azili. Do you feel like they can get out of the bottom pack on defense? And do you think that might be the missing piece to really – because their offense under Terry Stotts has always run really good offense in Portland. That's not the problem. The problem is defensively whether they can scrap together good games.
Well, yeah, I think Turner will help him on defense, because don't forget, McCollum is undersized for a 2, and
yes, he is.
Lillard, you know, he seems to be slipping towards the I'll play defense when I feel like it.
Yeah, and they got that mid-range thing going with McCollum and Turner, too, because McCollum's a great baseline mid-range shooter, too. You know, that's like one of his go-to shots. So they got a couple of different guys that can create offense basically out of nowhere. You know, Lillard, too. Lillard can just pop a 3 from 30 feet away and drill it. So, you know, they got a lot of potential there. But, I mean, are you a little bit more pessimistic about the Blazers than the other four teams we're talking about?
Yes, but, again, the Blazers are here because they did overachieve. And then, you know, like we said, Houston is there in their tier because they grossly underachieved.
Can they make the conference finals, the Portland Trail Blazers?
No.
Oh, wow. Like a straight no. Okay. Let's talk about a team that usually is in the conference finals, and they usually do get over 50 wins because that's their thing, and that is the San Antonio Spurs. Now, let's just get this out of the way. I believe they had 67 wins last year. It was a franchise record. I mean, they almost topped out defensive efficiency-wise. Like, they couldn't have played better defensively than they did in the regular season. What went wrong against the Thunder? Was it the Thunder?
It was just, I think, the Thunder. And then, you know, it's like we said, San Antonio comes in, we're going to keep doing what we do. And, you know, you got to beat us, we're playing our game. And then really Oklahoma City just out San Antonio to San Antonio.
Well, they also had more athletes, I think, was a big part of it, too. Like, I thought the athleticism of the Thunder really took a toll on the lack of athleticism for the Spurs across the board. Not only Tim Duncan, who had one of his – I think he had a game in the playoffs against the Thunder where he had no points, no rebounds, and 5 fouls. Is that right? Like, just an awful, awful performance.
He had an awful game, and it was just that's time caught up to him. And
yep.
Just they didn't adapt to anything, and just, you know, those
Ginobili was so inept that he was overmatched by Deion Waiters. And Tony Parker was, you know, I'll say this because I watched him. We watched him in the Olympics. Tony Parker did not look right in the Olympics. Like, I think that at the age of 34 years old, I really think that I think that the bottom has fallen out of Tony Parker personally.
There's a lot of miles on those legs.
I mean, as a player, last year he was at 12 points, 2.5 rebounds, and 5.3 assists. 5.3 assists isn't bad. But for him being a scoring guard at 12 points a game with the way that he does – here's the thing about Tony. They ran a lot of stuff for him when he was the top player, the top scorer. But so much of it involved Tony moving around constantly that with the way he slowed down, I don't know if he's really – he's even effective enough to be a starter. I would actually start Patty Mills.
That's drastic.
Why is that?
That is sort of Patty Mills is.
He played well in the Olympics for Australia.
Well, you know. Australia kind of overachieved for a while. Then they were like, "Oh wait, we're Australia. we crash back to Earth."
LaMarcus Aldridge, they seamlessly got him into the groove of the Spurs system, and he got to a point where he was. you know, he wasn't their top scorer. Kawhi Leonard was their top scorer, but LaMarcus Aldridge was at 18 points, 8 rebounds. He was their top rebounder. His field goal percentage was very high. He got very, very comfortable in that front court, regardless of the, you know, Boris Diaw being there and Tony and Tim Duncan being there, showing him how to play in Greg Popovich's system. Here's the problem, though. One of the other problems that the Spurs had in the Thunder series is that down the stretch, the usage for Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge, now they're superstars, okay? I understand why their usage was high, but it got so high, it got to a point where the Spurs weren't running really anything.
Yeah.
And so do you think that will they're going to double down on that, even though they brought in Pau Gasol? Or do you think that...
They're doubling down on it because they really... did patchwork. The wheels are going to come off this team. Like everyone's waiting for it, but like you mentioned, you got Tony Parker kind of, like you said, slowing down. Manu Ginobili, useless.
This is his last year, huh?
Yeah. You bring in David Lee, who couldn't resurrect anything in Dallas after getting cut by the Celtics, and then you bring in old man Pau Gasol as a stopgap.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's
not
the
just
Spurs.
That they couldn't get any athleticism at the starter level, so they decided to do patchwork on the bench of, okay, let's get some young guys who can jump. Let's get Dwayne Dedmon. Let's draft DeJounte Murray, even though he's not the type of player we usually draft, you know, in the first round. Let's bring over Davis Bertans, and let's bring over and then they have other guys like Bryn Forbes, who's a 3-point shooter, and Levio Jean-Charles, who had a really bad knee injury a couple of years ago. We haven't really seen much of him. He's from France. You'd have to expect more of Jonathan Simmons and Kyle Anderson, though.
That's what they're relying on, these international guys again, to sort of bail them out and have this resurgence. Because DeJounte, he can't shoot for anything.
No, he can't.
He is just, a nice little project.
He's a volume scorer. He's a guy, when the ball's in his hands, he can rack up stats. But he's very fast. He's very, very fast, but he's so skinny. I mean, he is thin as a rail. So
yeah, you got some work, but it's kind of hard replacing, you know, a 70-year-old Tim Duncan with a 58-year-old Pau Gasol.
I mean, Tim Duncan, I mean, amazing career. His defensive PE, I know a lot of people were making out how he had sort of lost it his last year. His defensive individual PER was very, very good. It was actually tops in the league. So his defensive presence will be missed in San Antonio. That is the one thing that Pau Gasol has been heavily criticized about with being signed by San Antonio, is that his pick and roll defense and his individual one-on-one defense leaves a lot to be desired, and it might not be a good fit with the defensive rotations in San Antonio, which are so well disciplined. Do you have any – what would you expect defensively out of the Spurs in terms of their efficiency? Do you think they're going to dip? Do you think they'll be in the top five still?
They should be in the top five because their pace is still going to be slow.
Yes.
With everybody speeding it up, your defensive efficiency is going to go up if you hold the ball all
time. Well, that's the funny part. When they signed LaMarcus Aldridge, they dialed it back. Their pace was actually decent the years in which they were – the 2 years they went to the championship and then they lost to the Clippers in the first round. Their pace was actually kind of either – like it was decent. It wasn't bad. You know, and they took a lot of threes. You know, that was another thing that really went down. The number of threes attempted went down pretty big for the Spurs with Aldridge, because he's like a mid-range monster, you know, and you got to use that. You have to use that to your best of your ability. Do you have a fear that the pace will stay slow for them?
That's probably, you know, it's still players going to get off for rest, and it's just, A, they're hunted, and B, it's just, all they know how to do is play basketball their way.
Mm-hmm.
They have like the Pittsburgh Steelers of, this is how we play it. We're not going to change anything. We could change some parts, but here's our team. Beat us our way.
Okay. Do you feel like they overachieved last year, or do they always overachieve?
No, they achieved just rightly with the regular season.
Who are they going to miss the most? Tim Duncan, David West, Boris Diaw, or Boban Marjanovic?
Well, they'll miss Boban.
Of course. Why, just the fanfare?
It's the old Darko thing. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, if he's on the court, your team is usually up by 30.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that means
the victory cigar, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Diaw is a tough one. I mean, because the reason why is he had gained weight even more than he had, you know, from 2013 and 14 when they were in the finals. But he was still a very good defensive forward for them. He was a leader. He was vocal. I mean, he was almost like a mini Duncan. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, he was the second Duncan. And the problem, like, you know, with that, you lose him and you replace him with David Lee, who is not...
He's not
even remotely this.
I could put Boris Diaw and Tim Duncan, or I could put like two David Lees together, and that's not as good as a Tim Duncan or a Boris Diaw. I mean, offensively still pretty good. I mean if you look at his numbers in Dallas, he was still getting at least a few points and a few rebounds every now and then. But you know, you saw him in Boston. You know, a lot of people felt like motivation was a huge problem for David Lee as well. So
that was it. He came in fat and lazy, and he tried to shake it out for Dallas, but he doesn't have what he had in Golden State. And yeah, it's a tough thing to replace with Gasol, who's limited defensively. Dwayne Dedmon, who's just he's good for what he'll ever be.
Okay, would you officially call the San Antonio Spurs an also-ran, or do you still think they can make the NBA Finals?
Well, you know, not to say no with Portland earlier, but any team could technically make the finals.
Yeah, the thing is, like, this is almost like one of those old reliables, like, oh, of course I have to pick the Spurs. They're the Spurs. Like, do you feel that way still?
They could. There's a chance.
Okay. Let's move on to the last team on this one, and it's also the second Eastern Conference team, and that is the Toronto Raptors, who had their best year by far as a franchise, over 50 wins, or was it over 55 wins, I believe. They had, 56 and 26 was their record. Coached by Dwayne Casey, DeMar DeRozan in a contract year played at an all-star level. So did Kyle Lowry. A couple of hiccups in the playoffs, obviously, against the Pacers and the Heat. They had to go 7 games to eliminate both of them. They were able to drag the Cavaliers into a 6-game series in the Eastern Conference Finals before getting blown out in Game 6. DeMar DeRozan re-signed at max level. Did you have a problem with DeMar DeRozan at max level?
This is like the Mike Conley thing. You had to do it, because if you lose him, where does that put your team?
To me, this is more like the Portland thing, only it makes sense. Like, where with Portland, they felt like, okay, we got to keep our core together. You know, but
I don't think it's a matter of keeping your core together. I just think he's good, and if we lose him, we are setting ourselves back another 2-3 years, because there's nobody on the free agent market who can come close to being an equal, suitable replacement. And then we are too good to get a high draft pick to improve.
Or do you think there it may have been a way to please Lowry as the star guy, so that when he opts out, they can max him out and then just surround a new nucleus around Lowry, even if you take like a lesser team for that 1 year, but then you build it back up. But anybody knows, I mean, that's a decent frame of mind for the kind of the DeRozan haters, the people that aren't really too fond of him because of his usage being so high and the fact that he's not the greatest shooter. But the thing is, people don't realize how hard it is to build a winner in either conference. You know, in the
build and maintain.
Yes, it's hard. And if you can maintain it and you get guaranteed results like Masai Ujiri's had in Toronto, yeah, re-sign him. Do it. Now, it came at the sacrifice of not having enough cap space, especially after the re-signing of Jonas Valanciunas a summer ago, to try to get Biombo back, because they didn't have it. They had a partial bird rights. They weren't going to be able to retain him. He got signed by the Orlando Magic for a pretty good coin. So how much are they going to miss Bismack Biombo? Now, let me ask you this. If I asked you that question at the beginning of the year last year, would it have been the same answer as you're giving me right now?
Because I also said he was one of the best signings from last year.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you did.
It was a nice, cheap signing.
I got to give you some credit.
I'm right at least 5%.
Yeah.
And you know, they're gonna not for $16 million. That's okay. You know, you want to get pay him that much? Okay, go right ahead. Yeah, they're gonna miss him, but they are. I can sort of see the development on this team. Jared Sullinger is just a 1 year rental. He's gonna be gone.
He's gonna give them 3-point shooting, which they were decent at anyway. They were fourth in percentage. They were 15th in makes, but he kind of gives them that. You know, my issue with them is obviously the rim protection part, because I don't. Jonas Valanciunas has come a long way defensively, but he's not exactly stout. You know, you also lost James Johnson in free agency. So
yeah, and you know, you drafted Poeltl, who kind of, he looks efficient.
Yeah, he's a little bouncy. You know, he's not exactly he's not Bismack Biyombo, but you know, in terms of his
it's a nice way to start. You know, Pascal Siakam, everybody was against that, but watching him play, I think they're going to try to make him Patrick Patterson.
Yeah, and I think they found a backup point guard or a third string point guard in Fred VanVleet. You know, so I think DeLon Wright's days might be numbered, you know, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and Norman Powell really overachieved last year.
That dude is a summer league god. Every time he goes to summer league, he plays, which tells me that he's better than the average NBA player.
Uh-huh. And then Terrence Ross is just sort of middling where he is, and
mm-hmm. Well,
Caboclo is
that's
sort
been
of
a big
miss.
Talk with the Toronto locals and the beat writers of where are they going to be at with Ross and Powell, because Powell's coming along, but Ross, even though he signed that new contract that has him signed through 2019, he's a tradable asset, and he's a guy that has to show that he can do something to earn his keep as a starter, because they need that help at the starting lineup now that they don't have Biyombo behind them in the front court. So they need that spark. So if Powell can provide more consistency at the starting lineup, maybe it's better to just play Ross as sort of the zany Jamal Crawford type, you know, spark plug off the bench.
Yeah, but can he adapt to that role? And just going back to your Biyombo answer, I don't think they're going to miss him as much, because don't forget, their big signing last year, Damari Carroll, was injured early, and then he was really, you know, 80% in the playoffs. He wasn't.
Yeah,
he
wasn't there
at all.
He wasn't there at all. You know.
So with everybody going to small ball, his defensive prowess will come in, because you have him, and you could go small with Sullinger the five. To if you know Valanciunas and Poeltl are too big for the lineup.
Carroll reminds me of Crowder, and it's not just the Braves. he's tall. He's slim enough to be a three, but he's powerful enough to play the four. You know, it's one of those. He's one of those 3-4 tweeners. But you know, the one difference is for the Boston Celtics to their advantage is that they got Jay Crowder for literally peanuts. Whereas for Damari Carroll, Toronto had to fish to go get him out of Atlanta. You know, so a little bit of a different scenario. Corey Joseph, do you think that it was probably one of the best sneaky deals that they made when they had picked him up from San Antonio when San Antonio pulled his qualifying offer?
Yeah, I was like, oh, he's going to be terrible. But he has sort of overachieved there and embraced his role, back home in Canada, so... You know, the thing is, we all look to Toronto's like, oh, doom and gloom is coming for them. DeRozan's going to leave. LA is going to, you know, throw the boat at him, and he's gone. Once you take him out, then Lowry's going to leave next year. And it's just like, oh, well, you lost Biyombo, and you held everything together, which is good for them. And Toronto, I don't think, has had that ever.
Well, what made the Raptors so good? Just give me, like, a generality of what made
them
so effective.
Not their coaching.
Oh, you don't think Dwayne Casey deserves too much credit?
It's just you watch in the playoffs, and you could just say, oh, at the end, they're gonna run around, and then DeRozan's going to take a fadeaway 26-footer that's going to be horribly – well, yeah, you could see it coming the second they walked on the court.
Mm-hmm.
It's not DeRozan's fault. His usage is high, and he takes poor shots because, well, they don't seem to design anything.
Yeah. And the thing about Lowry, too, is that his playoff struggles are an issue – but his regular season is not an issue. He always delivers in the regular season. That's just not a problem.
Let's put it this way. Whose playoff struggles aren't always an issue? it seems everybody has playoff struggles.
LeBron James.
Except for, like, four superstars.
Exactly. Yeah, it's true. That's true.
He's 5 for 10 today. Whoa, he's horrible. He's struggling. No, everybody, playoffs are tough. Every shot is now contested. It's not just, oh, it's regular season. Yeah, you know, you could go on a 5-minute run and sort of tucker yourself out, then we'll go on a 5-minute run. It's no, you know, like you saw, the scores were not 120 to 115.
They were second to last in assists, and they loved to drag out games. Like they played, they were 29th in pace, which is second slowest, and they were 5th in points allowed and 11th in efficiency. Their blocks are going to take a dip for sure because you're replacing Biombo with Sullinger. But in terms, and they also don't turn the ball over a lot. You know, they're sloppy with their possessions in terms of execution, but they're not sloppy when it comes to like handling the ball. That's why their pace is so slow. They were able to hold on to the ball and slow games down. I don't know if that's going to pick up because even though they're a youthful team, I guess Casey's mindset was, I have a really young team, and like we talked about this on a previous episode on this preview, is that when you have a young team, the best idea is to slow things down so that they can kind of gather what they need to do well instead of just hurrying them up and teaching them bad habits.
Yep.
Patrick Patterson's in a contract year.
Nope.
I mean, who can really take the spot? I mean, you think Pirtle could take the spot? Or because Patterson is sort of the sixth man. That's why that suggestion I had about Terrence Ross probably wouldn't work. But, you know,
they're going to try to trade. They tried. Don't forget, they tried desperately last year to unload him and upgrade that spot, and they couldn't find any takers. So I expect them to be heavy again trying to upgrade.
Okay, I'll give you a bunch of names here, and you just tell me one that pops out for you that you might – keep an eye on this season. Lucas Nogueira, Bebe, Bruno Caboclo,
nope.
DeLon Wright.
that was your guy.
Jared Otoff, Fred Van Vliet, and Brady Heslett.
No and no.
You are poo-pooing on this bench after Norman Powell and Jakob Poeltl.
Sullinger will give him – Sullinger is an upgrade over nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a big body. I like Powell. I like Joseph. And I like Ross. I don't like Ross, but he's
Sullinger is almost exactly what Luis Scola was. Almost exactly. Like, to the T. Like, he is like, he's the black Luis Scola.
He just needs to embrace it and not be like, no, I'm a point guard. I can shoot threes. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing Ross sort of has to be. Is like, look, I know I can't be that superstar, but I can be that Jamal Crawford, sixth man.
Mm-hmm.
We shall see. So,
okay,
let's rank them.
Okay, so we're going to be wrapping this one up with this episode, and we're going to we do our little things with the Hunter and the Hunted. Where would you see Toronto with the Hunter?
Hunted.
The Hunted. I don't know. I mean, I think they're going to go after it the first 3 months of the season.
They
like
are
they
the
have.
Defending number two seed.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to overtake one. So everybody's looking,
and their vulnerability is an issue. Where how would they respond if a team really gets after them, like the Knicks or the Hawks, or if somebody, yeah,
everybody other than the top two teams are vulnerable.
Okay, so this is, we're in the top eight now because we have five here and we got three more to finish. So let's go with number eight. Who's your number eight here? Like the bottom.
I know
part
you're
going
to put Oklahoma City in the bottom.
I am. Personally, I it's because to me they have the lowest upside and their bottom out factor is the lowest. Like,
okay,
them going less than 40 wins.
I'll accept that, and I'll put Portland slightly above them.
I'm okay with Portland. I think Portland's going to probably win that division. I don't know if they're going to get 50 wins because, like we talked about, I don't know if that core is the kind of team that can catapult you, you know, like the Batum, Aldridge, Lillard, Rolo core did. I mean, I think that's different. After that, it gets a little hard. I would actually say Toronto.
I would say the Celtics because they are just young and inexperienced, and it's kind of hard to say, you know, a top five team hadn't made it out of the first round in the past 2 years.
There's three things I like about the Celtics and why I think they can catapult. The playoff experience from the last 2 years, Brad Stevens, and the depth of the team in general. I think that can save them, especially during the injury riddled months. So I would say Toronto would go sixth. I would have Boston fifth and San Antonio fourth. I just can't. I can't vote against
Spurs are up top.
Yeah, I just can't vote against San Antonio. Like, if there's a team that would get to the conference finals, that I would have to say would be a guarantee, it would probably be San Antonio in this crop. You know, like, if I had to if I had to pick a team of, like, who would you absolutely say would make the playoffs, like the conference finals, if there was one of these teams, it would be the Spurs.
Yeah.
So.
So we flip flop on Boston and Toronto, but
it's typical you being low buying on your team because you want them to secretly do better.
No, it's just I see more of them, so I could see more.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I have it's one of those you have too much info, and it's like, well, I could see polls, I could see problems. You're like, no, they look good here.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, overanalyzation.
Well, that's the whole point of these previews. It's all over analysis. Like, you'd listen to any of these podcast previews, it's like, look at this stat, look at this stat, look at this sabermetric, look at this, look at these percentages, and then you play the games and you're like, oh, I didn't expect that. Like, and
but just from it's the hometown,
it literally
thing.
Happens like the first month of the season, Adam. Like literally like 1 month in, you're like, oh, throw that out the window.
No, we're not even. It's the first game. Remember a couple years ago, Cleveland lost their first game. Are they doomed?
Well, remember when Cleveland was playing great without Kyrie Irving, and they're like, oh, do we need to trade Kyrie Irving?
We need to get rid of him because they played good for four games without him.
Exactly. So, you know, that's going to be doing it for this episode, unless there was a couple of other things that you wanted to bring up about any of these teams before we got out of here.
No, the thing about these teams, like you said, there's not much of a difference. The middle of the pack to the upper of the pack,
mm-hmm.
there's teams that can leapfrog any of these guys. Portland does not, they, you know, in a real season, to say Portland is a top eight team with that really roster, it's like, no.
Yeah. But well, now the money makes it. Like, it's almost like the situation the Knicks are in. It's like, okay, this is your super team core of your own making. Now you got to make it work. You know.
Yep.
So, but all right, and that's going to be wrapping up this episode of PTPN's NBA Team Podcast. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Final part.